time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
This is Damian Lemon, and this is In the Conversation, the podcast. Yes, we're back. Thanks again for tuning in, lending your ear. Crystal clear, hopefully, you know what I mean? Ali is not in the conversation this week. He will be back soon, very soon, you know. But until then, in the meantime, in between time, we have our arts and entertainment correspondent. You know this man from the Mundane Festival podcast and stand-up stages all over the world. Give it up for my man, Chris Lamberth.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me.
No doubt. Chris, how you feeling?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm trying my best to not sound like Nas and AZ on that phone tap record. So hopefully it'll sound a lot better with the upgrade. That's a great song, but didn't they just tell all their information?
I mean, it was a phone tap. They didn't mean to. They thought they were talking freely. You know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Everything's a tap now. You got to move. Go ahead.
But they would say like, "Hey man, but don't tell everything." And then they keep telling stuff.
I haven't heard phone. Oh, yo, when you said Nas and AZ, immediately I thought Life's a Bitch. What was my other one? We the Flyers Gangsters. Was that a Nas and AZ too? I haven't listened to Phone Tap in so long. To be honest with you, I haven't listened to the Firm album as an album front to back probably since it premiered. And, you know, I would like to revisit it because I do remember back then, I think I felt like it, I was a little disappointed. Like I had high expectations for it. Dre, Nas, The Firm, AZ, Foxy. And then that was when the whole, what was it? Nature, Cormega, Beef kind of turned into a whole thing. But yeah, man. Yeah. Phone Tap. Wow. I don't think I've heard Phone Tap in forever. Now I got to listen back just for the audio quality that you alluded to.
Yeah, it made me think of that because I was like, oh, man, I don't want to sound like those dudes. It's a great record, but I just don't want to sound like that.
Yeah, man, there's some joints on there. One of my favorites that I guess is, one of my favorites that I probably revisit more than the obvious is I'm Leaving with Nori. Nori know this, what, and Nori know that, and Nori bust cats, cause, and Nori, you know, that shit was fire, I ain't gonna lie, that was a moment, obviously affirmative action. Yeah, I'm gonna go and revisit that, man. You piqued my interest to see what's what, man. But, yeah, man, how you doing? What's going on in your life?
I'm hanging in there, man, just plugging away, doing shows as much as I can. Thinking about new bits. Like, I think as my life changes and just as I evolve, I'm trying to just write about that, kind of just be in the pocket with what my life is, the path that my life is going. I'm just trying to put that on stage and just really trying to live a life worth commenting on, but not to just have like, you know, I have a bit, but just to really, I've just been thinking about that a lot lately and just trying to get better in that regard. And that's about it, man. Just kind of focusing on that, focusing on being a better son to my mother and, you know, all that jazz and enjoying football. I know you're a casual fan and I'm a God. I don't know if I want to say. I mean, I'm kind of a guy that just roots for the black quarterbacks mainly, but there's so many of them now that I had to pick a team. If I had to pick a team, I kind of like the Bears, even though they didn't do well, but I like Justin Fields. So anyway, that being said, I put a lot of money down on that NFL Sunday ticket and I'm not even a fantasy football guy. I'm a dude who buys Madden and plays it for a bit. I did not know how intense that shit is, dude. I used to have, I've had Red Zone for years, but when you can watch damn near every game, pretty much every game, it's insane. It's almost an information overload, but I enjoyed it.
Okay. You said a lot. We're going to recap a few things. No. I just want to let you cook. I've never heard of Justin Fields. That's a new black quarterback that I got to get familiar with. I'm going to Google that man. So you said also at the top of that, you said you've been trying to write for how your life has been changing. How has your life been changing?
Trying to be more vulnerable and open. Just like I watched that documentary you told me about on Stars, The Right to Offend.
Oh, okay.
About black comedians and how I've heard the term before, how with regards to the Richard Pryor book, Becoming, by Scott Saul, that I need to finish. How someone said that he had the ability to just like unzip his brain and just put it out there for consumption and be able to talk about it with this just extreme vulnerability. And I heard W. Kamau Bell say something similar to that about Pryor in the doc. And it's just like, I'm working towards that. I mean, he, to me, is one of the greatest of all time, probably one of the best that ever did it. If I can, you know, shoot for the moon, you end up amongst the stars.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Cause it's almost like, it's really not a competition. Like our ego and our, the stuff that makes us human, kind of like you think about like quote unquote all this competition, but it's really kind of like a dialogue that I have with myself that really isn't about anybody else. When it comes to being a practitioner of the craft, it's not like all that other shit outside that fucks us up that I bitch about to you and my other friends off mic. That shit doesn't matter. It's just like when it's you up on the stage and you trying to be excellent for 12, 15, 45 an hour, like trying to be excellent and rise above like your everyday bullshit and trying to be excellent on stage in that regard and be vulnerable. That was really inspiring to watch.
Yeah. I only saw the first episode so far. I need to check out the second episode. I know they get into Eddie and I forget who else, but I love a good documentary about comedy. And to that point regarding Richard Lennox Pryor.
You sound like somebody on Comedy Hype.
Right. Oh, man.
Richard, me and Richard.
Being Rich.
Let me stop.
You know, yeah. Shout out to Comedy Hype. Richard Pryor. You know, I always say I didn't really appreciate Richard Pryor until I started doing comedy.
Oh, okay.
You know,
that happens though. That's normal.
Yeah. And reason being was, and it sounds ridiculous chronologically, it just what it was, but I don't say introduced to stand up, but my very first, maybe it's Rodney, but my very first favorite black comedian was Eddie Murphy. I remember as a kid watching Delirious. Shout out to my homie Monty. His moms let us watch it at the crib.
How old were y'all?
I was like 9. I was young. I was not Delirious. It was not really, you know, appropriate, but it was great. It was great. And that was my first fit. And then, you know, this is back in the days too. Later on, my sister... You know, my sister's a lot older than me. My sister, I used to stay at my sister's house every so often for like the week, and she'd get me for the weekend. And this is back in the days of the good video rental.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to the video store and, you know, I get to rent a couple videos, you know, and I remember renting Raw, watching Raw. And I was young too. And, you know, my sister, you know, she was young and letting me live life. So I got to see Raw super early in the game, too. I'm going to be honest with you. Quick tangent. I like Delirious a lot more than I like Raw. I need to rewatch Raw, but I felt like Raw, even as a kid, I felt like Raw was a little bit more bitter. Like, Eddie was going through, especially that whole divorce bit, you know what I mean? She won half all of that shit. Like, it was darker. I got to watch it back, but it was a lot darker. But anyway, like I said, so I was introduced to Eddie. It was my first favorite black comedian. And when later on, you know, I'd heard about Richard Pryor. I might have even seen him in Superman 3 or whatever. Like, he was obviously in the zeitgeist early 80s. And even back then, he was celebrated, especially amongst older people. They looked at him as the god, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know at what point I finally came across some of his stand-up. But my first thought, again, this is ridiculous chronologically, I was like, yo, who is this old dude trying to sound like Eddie Murphy? You know. And you know, obviously, Eddie is the fruit from the Richard tree. But I just, you know, I see now, obviously now, you could see so much of the influence that Richard had on Eddie and so many others. So I kind of dismissed it as just like an older guy, you know, because he was talking about very mature things. He was talking about real life. He was talking about, he was very vulnerable. And I think back then I just kind of dismissed vulnerability as just adult content, things that I couldn't really identify with or relate to because I hadn't yet lived a life. But when I started doing comedy, back to what you said, one of the things that I was struck by, and I don't believe anybody in my mind has reached the level that Richard Pryor has when it comes to vulnerability. Like, he gives you everything, you know. He's a tragic genius, you know. Like, the genius couldn't come without the tragedy, and he was so honest about everything that was going on in his life, and he put himself out there. And speaking of which, you know, I've been on a bit of a, not a sabbatical, because I'm here obviously working. Y'all hear my voice, but I've been like in the cut a little bit and looking at, you know, just being in the moment, relaxing. We'll talk more about that. But I came across a DVD and I need to rewatch it, but it's a special called Richard Pryor Live and Smoking. Have you ever seen that?
Is that the one after he burnt himself?
No, that's Live from the Sunset Strip.
What was he wearing? I don't think I can remember by the suit.
But I'll tell you the context of it. I can't really remember.
I'm looking it up.
Live and Smoke, Live at the Sunset Strip. That's when he had the red satin shirt on. But and then I think Here and Now, Mike. That's the one in Long Beach. It was one of my favorites. But Live and Smoking,
I've seen them all, but it's just
this is the one that's in the Village. The one where he's bombing. You ever seen that? Mm-hmm. He's bombing. He's walking the crowd. He gets vulnerable. He says some super wild shit, but it's one of the best, especially for a new comic. It's one of the best specials to ever see. I can only speak for myself, but I think that there's, you know, I have to remind myself not to look up to comedy, you know? Like, for a long time, there was a time when I circled around comedy and I had to build up the nerve to really do it. So it was something that I, like, really wanted to do, damn near like a dream job. So, but once it becomes the job, you can't look at it as a dream job. It's work, you know? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, enjoy yourself. But with that, sometimes you could put, or I can put so much on it, you know, this pursuit of excellence or perfection, whatever that is, it ain't anything. But you have these certain gold standards of what a great special is. And there's this desire to get there. And I want to talk about that a little later, just the special in general. But watching this and watching this man take a slow one, taking a bath, like getting the fact that it's even in the world for people to see is amazing to me. But the fact to see, in my opinion, you know, or many others' opinion, but like the de facto probably best comedian ever, you know,
yeah.
arguably, you know, the best yeah. comedian ever to take a L and have it on public record and like seemingly walk away unfazed. It did not fuck up his legacy, you know?
No.
Like a lot of people don't even know about this special, but even if they do see it, it is just what it is. And it's something to watch. Like if you ever get a chance, if you can find it, check out Richard Pryor Live and Smoking. It's amazing for many reasons. But yeah, so that at that point, particularly that special and beyond, it really made me respect him for like how vulnerable and how transparent he could be and how he could stand in all of the things that, you know, could be weaponized against him. You know, even mm-hmm. the joke when he lights the match, that's Richard Pryor running down the street, you know, like yeah, all of these right. type of things. These are things that people are, you know, they trying to shut him down, trying to, you know, clown him or whatever. And he took complete ownership of it and it was amazing. And damn, it was one other point that I wanted to make about that. Just in general, and I'm not even arriving to that point in this moment, but I say this, he just like the fact that he owned it with no shame, you know, that it's just powerful. So yeah, he's that dude. And I'm with you as far as not even just living a life to comment on, but like being more vulnerable, and not even just being vulnerable and just like things that are, things that are like maybe things that you're not proud of or things that you might not want people to know about or whatever, but being right. vulnerable with just being in the moment, riffing live and like seeing where it goes. There's a Richard Pryor album that, shout out to Ali. When I first started doing comedy, like when I first said I had the desire to do comedy, I don't even know if I hit a stage yet. I remember Ali got me this DVD set. I mean, not DVD set, this CD set with like 12 of his, all of his albums. Gave that shit yeah. to me. And like, I was just listening to all of them, but there's one, and I wish I could find which album it was, but he's just like riffing. And like it gets funny, but it's kind of meandering and all over the place. And he says, he was like, yo, I didn't know where that joke was going. You know, I had no idea where I was going with that joke. I just had to trust myself. And, you know, hopefully, you know, I don't know if he said God, but he said, you know, we landed. We got to where we needed to go. But it was just like, I remember hearing that and I was like, wow. Because I remember when yeah. I first started doing comedy, I would try to you know, apply so much structure to my material that it was almost like oppressive on a certain level. You know, you couldn't really, you know what I mean? Like you couldn't really yeah. breathe. Like I remember when I first started doing comedy, I used to try to have my entire act, you know, I would write down everything down to like the transitional sentence. And if I did a joke out of order, like if I did my third joke second, it would be like a robot short circuiting because I was like, oh, shit, wait a minute. Wait, uh-oh, I wasn't supposed to do that. And it's like, dog, just be in the moment with the people. Sometimes you could, you know, like for me, there's such a pursuit of taking the risk out of it or being so dedicated to the page that it can disconnect you from the audience. And it's yeah. really about that moment that you have with that audience. That's the show. You know what I mean? Not everything that you got on your list. The show is what right. you give them in that moment. And it took me years and years and years and years to like really get comfortable with that and to even realize that. But yeah, yeah. Shout out to Richard Pryor, you know, and shout out to vulnerability on stage, man. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's real. I mean, I had a moment where a couple of weeks, I think it was last month, I did this show and I had to go to the bathroom, but the bathroom was right by the stage. Like you could, so people could see you going into the bathroom. And I said, you know, I'll just hold it until after my set. Cause I was the first comic up. And I was like, I don't really don't want them to see me go to the bathroom and then be on stage and wonder if I took a shit or if I pissed. And so when I got on stage, I talked about that. I said, I have to go to the bathroom. I really wanted to go, but I didn't want you guys. I said what I just told you, basically. And it crushed.
Right.
And it was just like, that's how I feel that in this moment. This is what's going on right now. And then I did my jokes, but I just, stuff that I wanted to do. But they, I had them in the palm of my hands the rest of the set, you know?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things. Like, I think for me, like, I knew about it before I started and everything. But I, my dad had... That nigger's crazy, which they call that, like they called it back then, a party album. And that was like my first time. Like, I remember like that he had the record. I remember copying it to a tape and I would like fall asleep listening to it and then just like get his other stuff. And I eventually had that, like that box set anthology. But yeah, once I started, I think like, once I started doing comedy, I started to appreciate him even more because there's really not that many people. Honestly, I think it's Richard. Maria Bamford does that, but in her own unique way. And I noticed like, as far as like a black superstar, I really feel like Martin was one. Like, obviously he's a descendant of Richard and Eddie and stuff like that. But like, he had his own flavor to really, Eddie was a one of one because he was like that leading man, and he made it look cool. Guys wanted to be him, girls wanted to sleep with him and all that. But it's like Martin eventually was a leading man, but he was like a kind of like a sidekick guy, and at least as far as the movies he was started out in. But then he became a superstar who wasn't afraid to be somebody who took an L, and I tell you about an L that he took on like that high level where you're in the movies,
right?
You got a hit TV show, and you're talking about, oh, I was fucked up over this woman, like that crazy deranged stuff on You Talking So Crazy. Oh,
okay,
Talking Shit to me, like, classic. Man, that's fucking like that. I remember being in maybe. Oh God! I was in junior high. I had to be in junior high, and my dad. I would play that in my dad's truck all the time. We'd be driving around, riding around, listening to that, and all over and over and over again. My dad must have been tired of it, but like, I don't know that I have an affection for him because he's from PG County, but like. Even still, just at tech from a technical standpoint, I don't know that we've ever really seen anything like that. I know I like Kevin Hart. I know he's the guy, and he's really funny. I like his shit. But Martin, it was different, man. It was just really different.
Yeah, nah, for sure. Tucson, Arizona, coming home. Listen, man. Talking Shit is a absolute classic. Absolute classic comedy album. It's probably top three for me if I think about it. I know that shit front to back, and it's so funny. I was telling somebody about it recently, and then they went to listen to it, and they liked it, and it was great to see that it still held up. I mean, that's damn near 30 years ago almost, and I mean,
the boxing stuff, like just all even him that. Talking about that boxing chunk. Where it's like I'm getting my ass beat. Like I'm taking these L's. Like it's not like I've never failed and this is me and look at me and I'm this. And it's like, no, I got my ass beat and that's why I do this.
Right. See, growing up, like I said, I've said this plenty of times on this microphone, Big Daddy Kane and Eddie Murphy were my idols. Like that's who I kind of was patterning my life after. But you know, we talk about vulnerability and everything like that. Eddie Murphy, the joke was never on him. The joke was on everybody else. He made fun of everybody in his orbit, but he was the coolest motherfucker. Even the way he said fought, he was like, they fought. Yeah. He said fought yeah. like it was an H instead of an R. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he was a cool motherfucker. And, you know, that type of shit is cool for the stage, but real life, life will hit you in some capacity, you know? Yeah. And I think as you get older, you realize part of being cool is how you rebound and respond and react to when things go left, you know, yeah. and being able to admit to, yeah, nah, it was a bad look for me, or I was nervous in that moment, or I was scared. I didn't know what to expect. I had to move through it, but I was not moving sure-footed with, yeah. you know, like, you know, you got this, when you're young, you got this idealized superhero bravado that you might aspire to be, which is not attainable, you know? But, yeah. Shout out to Martin Lawrence, man. He's one of the illest, one of the illest. I did see him take a slow one time. Mm. Oh, man, it kind of hurt my heart. I seen him at the theater at the Garden. And he was, I don't know what was going on, but he was doing, like, he was kind of all over the place a little bit. He was doing jokes that people had heard. The crowd was getting restless. You know what I mean? And he's from, you know, he's an OG from the Def Jam era. He's the first Def Jam comedy host. So, you know, he got an audience that could be vocal. And after a while, people started, you know, frustration started to build. People started to heckle, like, loud. Nigga, we done heard that joke before. Fuck out of here with that shit. Like, it's like, it got real, you know, New York. You know what I mean? And when that happened, I remember in that moment, I was like, oh, shit, Martin about to light this nigga up. You know what I'm saying? Here come Martin. Mm-hmm. They done awakened the beast. Martin about to get on. Because, you know, if you watch Def Comedy Jam, Martin was undefeated. He was destroying everybody. And, you know, he kind of, like, he asked security to have that man taken out. And I was like, oh.
Get that guy out of here.
Ah, I was like, wait a minute. He called the cops. But it was a moment of real life. It was like one of those, again, it's similar to, like, seeing Richard Pryor in Live and Smoking, when you see some of your heroes, you know, be human. You know what I'm saying? Have a real moment. It can, you know what I mean? Like, it's in retrospect, it's, you know, like, you know, look, man, his legacy is still his legacy. Oh, yeah. He's still that guy. But it was a moment and I was interested to see that. And, you know, in a homage, I got booed at the Garden and at Madison Square Garden. But that was in his honor. That wasn't because of my own, you know what I mean, scale or proficiency at that moment. It was more so, it was like an homage to my man Martin Lawrence and shit. I don't know if people really, I think it was lost on the crowd, but that was the intention. Anyway, yeah, man. So shout out to Martin, shout out to Rich, shout out to Eddie. You know what I mean? Man. Yeah. Black comedy. Yep. Yeah, man. I'm chilling though. I'm right here sipping some Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
It sound better than it is. I'm not a white wine kind of guy, to be totally honest with you. But I had it on deck and I wanted to taste it. You know what I'm saying? I was going to drink a beer, but my beer wasn't cold enough. So I ain't want to drink a lukewarm beer. So I was like,
oh, that's not good.
You know what I mean? That ain't fly. But I'm also low key, it's over now, but I had a little buzz, you know, since our last conversation last week. I have seen both Bottoms, and today I saw Equalizer 3.
Oh, and, nice.
We could chop it up about it, but so I went to see Equalizer 3 today, and I don't know where you at, because I know you are a cinephile. You go to the theater quite a bit, so I'm not sure if you just play it all by the rules, but for me, I can't really enjoy the cinema unless I sneak some shit in. You know what I mean? That's just, it just has to be what it is.
Okay.
I have to sneak something in. So
what'd you sneak in?
So today I went.
And what theater did you go to?
Right now I'm actually out on the island, and I went to Roosevelt Field. So I stopped by a good Walmart, America's Bodega. You know what I mean? And I got a few snacks. I got a what do they call them shits? Oh man. Popcorners, like they're like popcorn chips. You know what I'm saying? You've seen them before. I forget the name of them, but they're like popcorn chips. So I was looking for some popcorn, preferably some caramel or whatever, because I had some caramel popcorn when I seen Bottoms. But anyway.
Popcorners.
That's what they're called, right? Popcorners. So I got Yeah, they pretty good. I've typically got the sweet and salty. You know what I mean? There's also Indiana Popcorn Company. They make a good ass sweet and salty kettle popcorn. But anyway, I wound up getting a little spicy queso. I got a Snickers bar, which I did not eat, and I snuck in a tall boy. Snuck in a good tall boy.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, nah. I was going. Shout out to my man Sergio Chicone. I was going full dirt bag. I smuggled in a tall boy golden monkey. So you know that's 9.5 ABV. So you know what I mean.
You didn't fall asleep or anything.
Ooh wee. Well, let's talk about it. This is the thing. So first of all, I got in there, I bought my ticket last minute. I was going to do it, but I was like, I wanted to buy it as close to showtime as possible. Cause what I hate post COVID is when I buy a ticket, when there's nobody around me and then I get there and there's somebody right next to me.
I hate that shit. Right,
come on, y'all. What's going on? Y'all are too intrusive.
Where do you sit?
Typically. Okay. Traditionally, I'm a aisle back row type of cat, but
me too. Back row,
aisle. You know what I mean?
So like on the end seat or just inside?
No, on the end seat. The very last. If I had to get up and go, I'm out.
Oh, I do that too.
You know what I mean? Ever since the shooting that train wreck, I'm ready to get the fuck on. But anyway, this time no, just on some cinephile type of thing. I got the, you know, it's close to the middle. You know, it's always weird how they align the seats, but I got that middle seat, pretty much the second to last row, middle seat. So I'm right at the concave portion of the screen, so where I could be fully immersed in this fucking Equalizer 3 action. And so I got there, you know, I smuggled my Snickers, popcorners, golden monkey, and a water, smuggled it into the good old theater. And as I'm walking in, I'm like, oh damn, somebody sitting right fucking next to me. What is going on? Why? At the point when I bought it, nobody was there. I'm like, come on. So I get closer and I realize they're sitting in my seat. So, and it was like an older white lady. I hate to have to tell you this. I said, hey, listen, you in my seat. And she had her blanket and everything. And she was older or whatever. Dude. I probably should have been like, I'll keep it. But nah.
Was it a lot of people in there?
No, it wasn't a lot of people. It was still many seats. And it was still kind of preview time. So she got up out the joint, moved over a little bit. So I got up in the seat and it was already pre-warmed, which is always hard to like adjust to someone else's body heat. You know what I mean? Especially like an older person, because I think when you on your way out, your body heat is a little bit more, you know what I mean? Like it's a little bit more dense.
I forgot to ask, what theater was it? An AMC?
It was an AMC. Tuesday. Okay. AMC. I had to get my little, you know what I mean? My little Tuesday AMC deal going.
Gotcha.
So boom, I went in there. Soon as the lights went down, cracked my golden monkey. You can hear it crack. popped open my popcorners. And
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah, right in the middle of Nicole Kidman. I didn't even wait till all the lights went down. I was and I was trying. Actually, I did wait till after Nicole. I was trying to wait for like some type of big noise. You know what I mean? So I could, you know, because when you got contraband, you always feel like, or I always feel like my contraband is louder
than the, you know what I mean? Like the legitimate concession snacks. You know, nobody's popping a can on a, you know. But what I noticed is when I looked around, first of all, nobody's really checking for
Nobody gives a shit.
Nobody gives a damn, but you still, I'm still diligent. I still, I'm not flagrant. I still tuck it, make sure you don't see anything, whatever. But yo, I seen people, they had like, they brought like outside shit. I see somebody had their own little like thermos, you know, like I don't know what was in the thermos, but people were like relaxed. You know, this felt like a picnic ground. So anyway, crack that open, eating, you know, tan down the golden monkey. And it was good. Now, as a tall boy, so like damn near in the middle of the thing, I had to, you know, I had to go and do a quick urinate. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And hopefully, you know, sometimes when you're drinking, when you break that seal, it's a double back, double back. Fortunately, it wasn't a lot of that, but that 9.5 kind of got to me towards the end, and I might have slept through about 8 minutes towards the end. You know what I mean? I might have slept through about 8 minutes. I enjoyed the movie, though. I really dug it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of The Equalizer, which I feel like, and I'm almost positive, you could correct me because you would probably know better than I. This is Denzel's only sequel title, right? The only time he ever did a sequel.
That's the only franchise he's done.
Which is bananas. But I, you know, we talked about, you talked about old man, you know, assassins. I feel like that genre is not as much as it used to. I grew up on, like, you know, Charles Bronson and things of that nature. So it's good to see this type of thing. And what I like is I like Denzel in this moment because he old Denzel, first of all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Old. So it's unassuming, you know, and he's so he's going to telegraph everything he's going to do to you. Shout out to my man. I ain't going to shout my man's out because I don't want to incriminate nobody. But one of my homies, we was about to get into a fight and he kind of did some old Denzel Equalizer shit. He telegraphed the whole shit. My man Theme One. But I'd use that name. But my man was like, "Yo, I don't think you really want to fuck with me because what I'm gonna do?" He had an umbrella. He had a long, like one of them little long umbrellas, the joints that you could kind of use as a cane, but it didn't have the cane thing. It's like one of them umbrellas that you use on the golf course.
Sure. You know?
And he talking to this cat. He's like, "Dog, I really don't think you want to do." And this is my man. Like, he don't really fight a lot. You know what I'm saying? He's kind of a bit of a brainiac, but don't push him. So he hit him with some little brainiac, like he hit him with the Equalizer 25 years earlier. And he said to my man, he was like, "Look, you really don't want it with me because what's going to happen is you see this umbrella that I got. I'm going to take this umbrella and I'm going to bring it up and it's going to go through your trachea. And then I'm going to punch you in your face. And then it's going to get bad from there." I remember this to this day. He said this motherfucker was like in 11th grade and he said trachea. And I was like, "Yo," and everything he said, he did. It was amazing. But back to Denzel. Wow. So Denzel's doing shit like that. Denzel's like, "Yo, your man over here, he's a little too close to really hit me. He's going to wind up killing this guy. And I feel sorry for this guy's, you know, his family and all of that." I love when Denzel is walking you through and explaining the ass whipping. You know what I mean? Like that's a talent in itself. And like, he's got, she's like, "You know, this right here is called pain compliance. Right now, this is a 3. You know, I could go up to a 4, but if I go up to a 4, you're going to shit on yourself and nobody wants that." You know what I mean? So I love that.
I like how it got to him when he said, "Is that a Timex?" He was like, "No, it's a," and he fucked, you know, he grabbed his.
Got him. Shout out to Timex. But, so I was with the whole thing pretty much all the way through. You know, he was getting busy. It wasn't as wall to wall. Like somebody told me it was close to John Wick. He still had his moments of chill. And I also like the character because he's chill. I like the guy, the loner in the world. Like, I like that. You know what I mean? Just enjoying a cup of tea. You know, I thought the woman, Amina, felt like she was trying to throw him, you know what I mean, some rhythm. But then later on, she went and hugged a dude, that I guess a soccer player. So that kind of threw me off. But maybe I fell asleep. But what was the significance of her giving this man the spoon at the end? Does that have anything to do with anything?
I don't know.
She gave him a spoon, like at the end, at the very right before the credits. She was like, "You forgot this," and she gave him a spoon. And I was like, maybe I slept through that plot point. But anyway,
I don't know. I thought that she was into him, but maybe she obviously asked him to go out.
Yeah,
and they went out on the town. So you know, it maybe something could happen.
Oh, I slept through the out on the town part. I don't remember that. Oh, okay. Maybe I peed through that. I don't remember that part. Okay. I don't remember. I remember she said, "Yo, who cooks for you? I'm going to show you Blase Skip." He was like, "Okay, yeah, for sure." And I didn't know. Okay. But anyway, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed The Equalizer 3. It was good time. Bottoms, though, it was cool. It was cool. It got better as it went along. It didn't blow me away. I think it was good. I think the premise or the intention or even the spirit behind it, I felt that. I don't know if the execution was where it could have been. I enjoyed it. I had fun, but I just felt like the tone was, I don't want to say uneven, but it was just a little askew. I don't know if it's camp. Maybe it's kind of camp or whatever. And camp is something that, one, I can't all the way define. Like, when I hear it, I'm kind of like, oh, so this is camp. This is what y'all call camp. And it doesn't really always, I don't always really like jibe with it. But I like Ayo, which I believe I'm mispronouncing her name. I heard somebody pronounce it in a way.
I thought you said it right. Ayo. Okay.
I heard somebody say that shit, and it sounded way more sophisticated and elevated than I did, but that's how I read it. And I liked her. You know, I'm a fan of her, obviously, from The Bear. And, you know, I knew she was a comedian, but I didn't know much of her material going forward. So, like, The Bear is where I kind of connect with her. And then actress that played PJ, the other co-lead, I'm watching the movie and I'm like, yo, where do I know homegirl from? Where is she from? Then I find out later on that's the girl from The Idol.
Bodies.
That's the best Idol, friend.
She was in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Who was in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies? Did I see that? I know about it.
Shorty from our girl from Industry.
Oh, I forget how you pronounce her name.
Mahala.
What was Bodies, Bodies, Bodies about? I feel like I might
say it's a joint about the young 20 somethings being having a hurricane party in this big ass mansion. And they play this game called Bodies, 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 and where you like pretend somebody's dead and then you try to figure out who did it.
That's the joint with Pete Davidson's in it, right?
Pete's in it. Yeah. It's good.
I didn't see it. I remember seeing the trailer for it. I never seen it. I gotta check it out. But
yeah, it's worth seeing. Rachel Sennett. She was the big thing was that she did was the Shiva Baby, which is the first feature length film from Emma Seligman, who did who directed Bottoms.
Okay.
They co-wrote it together. Right.
Which I appreciate.
And, yeah, and this was like that was kind of a sleeper hit, like a small. I think it's on Max now. It's streaming on Max, I believe. Okay. Yeah, it is. And I remember watching it during the pandemic, during lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
From they would have the festivals that they would have. They would allow you to watch the movie. You could rent the movie and have it. So that was one of the movies I checked out. I forget what film festival it was from, but I think it was like a gay film festival. Mm. And I remember this being like, because I remember everybody talking about it. I think it was in New York. I think it was some kind of queer movie festival. And I was like, well, I want to see it. And that's where it was playing. So I went to them and got the, you know, and rented it or however you do it. It's basically like you renting it.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. It's a solid movie about this girl who's kind of let me see what Letterboxd said. A college student attends a family shiva where she is accosted by her relatives, outshined by her ex-girlfriend, and face to face with her sugar daddy and his family. So it's like a day in the life of this young woman, and everything kind of comes crashing down with the backdrop of a shiva, of a, you know, funeral for someone. So it's a very solid movie. I need to see it again. That this one, Shiva Baby, is more straightforward, way more straightforward than Bottoms. I really liked Bottoms. I thought the shit was crazy. It was stupid in a good way. I thought they were like taking really big swings, and just kind of like playing off the trope of having this, I guess, like this. I saw someone say this on YouTube. And I think it might be Amanda the Jedi that said this. I don't know if I'm attributing that to the right person, but
Amanda the Jedi is hilarious. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, she's a YouTuber that I follow. She has this, sometimes she's a guest on this podcast called Intercut with this guy named Zachary Shevitz and Arturo Zurita, who was on my podcast years ago. And they go to a lot of the film festivals and stuff like that. So I think she was saying how, damn, where was I going with that? It might have been her was talking about how, like, you put, like, there's certain cultural things that happen within this high school, within the context of high school, like how you have a movie like Superbad, and the movie, what's the movie that Olivia Wilde directed? Oh, my, Booksmart. How Booksmart was trying to be like a female version of that, you know, having like these two friends that got to get laid before we graduate. Same thing that American Pie did, but it's a queer spin on it. So this one was a little more like out of the box and way more unconventional, like Fight Club meets Superbad meets this movie called Sugar and Spice that came out like 20 years ago. It was crazy, but one of the funniest moments to me was like, the setup was great and the payoff was, to me, was great. You know, remember the part where they would write on the lockers and the guy, the mm-hmm. janitor would clean it off.
Right.
And it got to the point where they wasn't cool anymore. Mm-hmm. And Io was just like yelling at that shit was like fucking so funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a funny sight gag. And it was like a nice little recurring joke. My thing about it was, again, like I said, there are moments when it was funny. Mm-hmm. My thing, like I said, I felt like the tone was just, I guess, uneven, because there's parts where it's like, this movie seems to be very self-aware and meta, and it's mm-hmm. a commentary on some of the cliches of a lot of these high school trying to get laid type of movies, and we're gonna fuck with the tropes all the way down to like the slow clap and, you know, all of this. So felt like very self-aware, but then it'll be like in it. Like it wasn't, it was like, it's like, are we above it all or are we within it? Are we embedded? Mm. Are we like, so that's where it kind of would throw me. And then it was moments when where it was like, and it reminded me a little bit in the way of They Clone Tyrone too, where you couldn't totally get a grasp for exactly what the time period was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I guess it was a period piece. I think it was 2002 or whatever. But it was just like, oh, okay. That was never really explained, but it was like, okay, that, I guess that makes sense, that, you know, that type of thing. I'll say again, there were moments that were funny. And as I said, as it went on, as it got its groove or whatever, like when I just kind of surrendered to whatever it's going to do, I guess I enjoyed it more. I will mm-hmm. say, I like Marshawn Lynch. Marshawn is just a beast. He's just a funny dude. Like they let him live life and do him. But I'm going to be honest with you. What's Punky's last name from SNL? Is it Robinson?
Punky John?
Punky Johnson, I think.
Is it?
Her little scene, she bodied that shit. Like, it was very funny. Yeah. She was funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed a lot of the, I enjoyed a lot of the movie. It was cool. I enjoyed it. I wasn't like super blown away, you know, but I thought it was, yeah. I thought it was solid. You know, I would definitely watch it again on streaming.
I definitely want to see it again. Cause like I was sitting there at like a 10 a.m. screening on a Friday. And I was just like, what the fuck is this in a good way? Like,
right.
It reminded me like of Daria. I don't know. Do you remember Daria?
Yeah, on MTV? Yeah, of course.
It's like the shit that they was doing on that show. Like, it's real smart. They're making social commentary. But it's like how all the the football players had their fucking uniforms on the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And they reminded me of that character, Kevin. I was like, okay, it's like, I see. It's like, what are y'all, like, it's grounded in reality a little bit, but mm-hmm. then it's still kind of wacky.
Right.
It's like, what are y'all doing? And it's like, I don't think you really get it all in one watch
right.
for me, but like I was rocking with it. I just appreciate sometimes when filmmakers just like take a big swing in it and they really try, they show it. It's like, we've seen this before, but we really haven't, you know what I mean? It's like, you haven't seen her take on it. So I was rocking with it. I definitely want to see it again.
Yeah. I'll watch it again. Yeah. You're the second person to kind of compare it to Daria as well.
Mm.
So I'm gonna check. I'll definitely rewatch it when it comes to streaming. But yeah, I wasn't mad. And at that screening, I definitely was back row right on the aisle. Right on the
Where
aisle.
Were you at AMC?
No, I went to Nighthawk out in
How was that? Which one did you go to?
I went to the one by Prospect Park.
That's not the William. Okay.
No. It's fun. It's cool. It reminds me of like, it's a throwback, but what the fuck? What was the name of the spot on Houston?
Sunshine.
It kind
that
of
was
feels
the shit. Man.
Yeah,
I
used to
I
like Sunshine. Sunshine was a dope deal, little theater. I'm sad that didn't survive. But it got a little bit of Sunshine feel in the way, like how it's like brick. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. limestone or whatever. It was cool. I enjoyed myself out there. I enjoyed myself. You know what? Some shit that I wanted to talk about, and it happened there. So I ordered some caramel corn instead of regular popcorn. It was fucking good. It was a little dainty ass serving, though. I tell you that for what it cost, it was a little dainty, but shit was good. And this happened there, but it's happened many times, not many times, but it's happened often in recent years when the server comes and takes your plate before mm-hmm. you're done with it. You know what I mean? And you got a moment, it's a split second moment where you like, am I going to be the motherfucker to be like, yo, oh, ew, I'm not done. Or am I going to just take that L? And I was like, yo, bring that back. Bring
I
that.
Paid,
little,
nah, I paid 15 absolute, bucks for that.
Yeah. I'm getting all of that caramel corn. Stop playing with me. You know? So.
That happened to me on a date.
Yeah.
I took my chicken away.
Yeah. And that's that sometimes I think it's strategic. Because then they like, yo, are you going to be the guy to do that on your date? You know what I mean? But shit, I'll do it on the date. And the date be with her. She be like, oh, they tried it. You know what I mean? That's when you like, I got an ally. But, you know, so yeah, I did that. And then after that, I went to this little, not too far down the way. I went to this little restaurant called Weeded that I had been wanting to go to. It's like a whiskey bar / pizza shop. Like, they're supposed to be real good with their pizza or whatever. And like they do bar pizza. On Church Avenue? Church in okay. Coney Island. Yeah. They do like little bar pizzas or whatever. So we got the got what was built as the vodka slice or the vodka pizza. I don't know who poured that vodka. I ain't taste no vodka. It was regular. Good. Huh?
It looks good, the pizza.
It looks good. It's a very attractive looking pizza. It looked like it's gonna be all of that. It's okay. Not bad. But again, it's regular. It ain't fucking okay. with Beekman's Ale House. It's not fucking with Kinchley's Tavern. If we talking about, you know how we get into this bar bar pod talk. It's decent. I would go back. Because I did not have any of the whiskey. I would go back. Mm-hmm. I had the little, they did like a passion fruit ginger type of drink. That was fire. That was probably the best thing I had. The pizza was solid, but it was just like, it didn't taste like what I expected at all. But it wasn't bad pizza. You know what I mean? But again, like, it wasn't bad. It wasn't amazing. That's what I'll say.
I will add this to, I'll follow them on Instagram.
Yeah, check them out.
A lot of the women that I match with live in Brooklyn. So,
there you go.
It'd be somewhere
there you go. There you go. There it is. There you go. I will tell you the cool thing about Nighthawk is after you do buy tickets, they email you and they say, yo, we'll give you a free ticket. If you buy another ticket, we'll give you a free ticket for coming out. Like, you got a month. Mm. So, you know what I mean? A little comeback situation. I'm not mad at that. So, yeah.
I like them. I've been a couple times. I'm trying to think what I ate. I mean, I remember seeing this movie, which is really good, called Green Room.
The Ben Stiller joint?
No. It's
like a horror film, right?
Yeah.
Didn't Ben Stiller direct that?
No. It was Jeremy Solliner.
Oh, okay. I'm bugging.
Patrick Stewart was in it.
I'm thinking of Greenberg. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Greenberg. Okay.
Yeah, I remember Greenberg, though.
It's a punk rock band becomes trapped in a secluded venue after finding a scene of violence. For what they saw, the band, it's good. It's really good. It's Patrick Stewart, Anton Yelchin, the late, great Anton Yelchin, Imogen Poots, and Alia Shawkat. And that was like 2016. And I remember going there. And I think I got something. Whatever it was good. It was like some kind of slider or some kind of shit. And I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have ate this movie. Shouldn't have been eating this while I was watching this movie that gets pretty gory at times. But I've had good experiences there. I just never been around. Or every time I would try to go since then would just be like, the times would be off. And I'd be trying to go catch a movie before a show or something. Right. So I got to make it a point to go back to these places.
Mm, yeah. That was my first time at Nighthawk. I'd always, you know, I knew about the Nighthawk Williamsburg joint for a long time. I just kind of got hip to the one over by Prospect Park. So I'd always wanted to go because it seemed like, you know, it was well curated. Mm. You know, it kind of is in the same vein as like an Alamo Draft House. Which I do appreciate. I like Alamo Draft House. I haven't been in a while, but I like Alamo Draft House a lot.
I've only been to the one in Yonkers, and I love my experiences there.
That's the one I've been to. That was back when I was smoking weed and shit. Like, I remember getting super high, and I remember that. Maybe I was high, but I remember their concessions being fire. I enjoyed life. I went to go see.
The food's good there. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to go see The Irishman. And it was I was so proud of myself because I didn't pee at all. You know, when I hear about a 3-hour runtime, I'm always thinking like, ah, shit, I might miss a little bit because I might have to run to the bathroom
before. I always worry about that stuff too.
Yeah, we was good money. Yeah, man. I would talk to you about the Shy, but I am not caught up. You know, I watch it with my sister. She's
you made me feel like an asshole on Friday. Nah. I was like, I'm just giving.
Yeah, I know.
But some of the shit that you said last week, I was like, nah, Lemon was right.
Oh,
I was
man,
like, well, I'm not gonna. Yeah. I was like, I'm not gonna say anything.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't want to spoil it, but it seems like they're accelerating shit.
Interesting.
I think they're like episode 6. This might be 6.
Well,
or 7 coming up this week, I think.
From what I heard, and I'm not sure. It could be. I don't know where I read it, but from what I understand. I don't know if there's 16 episodes in this season and they're going to split it at 8 and like take a like a hiatus. I hate when they do shit like that.
Fucking hate that.
Yeah,
shit.
So you know, maybe that, I don't know what the deal is. I did watch Force, and
I'm caught up.
What you think? What talk to me? How you feel about Force? Because I feel like I'm forcing
it. It's not gonna be Kanan or Ghost. You know, it's not going to be any of those, but it's just like I'm starting to get situated now because it's been so long. They stars just kind of like piecemeal stuff out there where they just, I mean, maybe that's just them just being good drug dealers where they're just like, we're going to give you this here. You're going to be waiting for 3 or 4 months. And then we're going to give you this one. It's good to be back in that world, but I just don't know if I care about any of these people. Just yet.
Yeah I
don't know. I felt the same way about Top Boy, the final season of Top Boy that came out on Netflix. But then after I just kind of, because I don't know, have you watched it?
I've not all? I've been saying, okay, I'm gonna I've tried to watch it a couple times. Somebody, shout out to whoever it was, I try to find them, but somebody suggested it. Every so often people be like, yo, why don't you talk about this? I feel like I've tried to watch Top Boy and I just couldn't. I saw you tweet about saying how you're going to be saying in it and all of that shit.
Yeah.
Sometimes a lot of that accent shit takes me out of it. You know what I mean? Huh. And I think that was the case for Top Boy. The only most recent show that took place in London that didn't take me out of it based on the accent and actually made me want to go out there to London, Black London, was I May Destroy You. But I see so many, shout out to my man, Lord Driggs. He's the one that was like, yo, you need to talk about Top Boy. I'm going to try it again.
It's good. It's one of those joints, now that it's over, you can immerse yourself.
Is it over?
It's over.
Okay.
They said this was the last one. So they say.
Right. Because I feel like they said it's over before. Okay.
And what happens is some of the characters, it's over.
Okay.
But this, it's one of those joints where if you can, you watch that and nothing else really. Where you just kind of, you have to like immerse yourself in it. Like, I remember going back during the pandemic, the lockdown, like rewatching The Sopranos, and that was kind of all that I watched until I was done. For this, like, it's especially because of the dialogue, you just kind of lock yourself back in. Like, I was like, okay, now I'm getting back into it. But with this one, I was like, with Top Boy, I was like, okay, now I have a thread that I can go into because something happened to a character that I liked, and I was like, well, fuck everybody else. But then there were certain threads that I was like, okay, this is important. This is okay. All right. I see where you're going. It's worth checking out.
I got some space. I'm gonna try it. Did you ever watch Gamora?
Yeah. Yeah. Fonte put me onto that. Yeah,
Gamora's my shit. I fuck with Gamora. Yeah. I might be one season that I didn't see that I need to.
That was pretty ill.
Yeah.
Didn't we talk about old boy that was the main guy from Gamora was on the last season of Fargo? I feel like you and I had a conversation about that.
Cat with the baldy?
Not the baldy. The
Right. The gangster, the one that had the baby and all of that. Like the yes.
Yeah.
We did have a conversation. I totally forgot about that. Yep.
Yeah. I would recommend it's a romantic comedy, but like this movie called Rye Lane, probably one of the better movies of the year. I didn't see it,
but I know what you're talking about. I've seen it. It's like a Hulu, right?
Yeah. It's on Hulu.
I heard about it. Yeah.
One of the homies from Industry is in it. David Johnson, that actually plays a gay character on Industry.
The black dude. Okay.
He's loving up on a black queen in this one.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, but this one, it was really good. It reminded me of I think I tweeted this before earlier in the year. Kind of reminded me of a more fun version of Medicine for Melancholy. And Medicine for Melancholy is like one of my favorite movies of the modern era.
Yeah,
but just for your listeners to know. So, but yeah. like I just got the, I picked up the Criterion Edition recently. I gotta watch it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, it could use some fun. That's a slow movie. Yeah, I know you love it. Burn. I know you love it. It's a slow. Yeah. It's like an incense.
When I first met Wyatt Cenac, I think before I met Wyatt Cenac, I was like, I think I messaged him. You know, when people were on Facebook and shit. Man, I really loved your movie. And then I opened for him like a few years later, and I was like, dude, Medicine for Melancholy, man. And Wyatt is kind of is a humble dude, so he was just like, oh, okay, buddy.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, yeah, nigga, man. You don't understand, son.
Yeah.
I wasn't like that, but yeah, I love that movie.
Nah, that's what's up. Shout out to Wyatt Cenac. He's a real one. Like, he's a good motherfucking dude. Yeah, man. He kind of he walked me into the alt scene. Real talk. Like,
okay.
He was my vouch. Like, he vouched for me. Like, he walked me into the game. There was a cat that was kind of fronting on me. And I want to hear about that off mic. Yeah, we'll do it. That's an off mic situation. But Wyatt cracked the door for a young brother. And it was nothing. You know what I mean? And it was just in his own spirit. You know what I mean? But he's a cool motherfucker. And he got the disposition of like a jazz ass nigga. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know. So, yeah, shout out to Wyatt Cenac. Real funny dude. Real cool dude. I haven't seen him in years and years, but yeah, peace to that man.
He's a fucking G. Like, he's the first comic to, and I know what you get paid here, so I'm just going to pay you on top of what you got
Look
paid.
Look at that. Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Peace.
He's a G.
Yep. Yeah, man. I mean, we here at the hour. You got anything else you want to talk about? Talk about. We here. You know, I'm not going to lie. This Sauvignon Blanc is doing what it needs to do.
Okay.
Talk to me, man. You got anything you want to speak on?
I was just thinking about Nas announced today. We're recording this on a Tuesday, breaking the fourth wall. But like, Nas announced that he's got Magic 3 coming out.
I saw.
I'm gonna have to Dan Levitard some shit on my podcast. Like, we've never seen this before, you know.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that, and I also in this conversation about OGs doing their thing, still thriving. I forgot on my part, a blunder on my part, to mention Black Thought. I think he kind of gets missed a little bit because he's from a group, he's from the Roots, but these projects with Danger Mouse and then
Sean
the Thoughts. Uh-huh. The Streams of Thought joints.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the Glorious Game with L. Michael's Affair.
Yeah.
It's it's insane. And it's just I mean, Black Thought's obviously my all time favorite. I think he's the greatest, but when we talk about comedy, how you take the tools, taking that baton from Rakim, Kane, and the Architects to taking it above and beyond, to me that's who he is for me. It's just fucking remarkable, and I love seeing it because it just kind of feeds into hopefully as I get older to just keep getting better, you know what I mean, getting better every January, you know what I'm saying? So I appreciate that, and I appreciate these offerings from these guys, man, because it's I always feel great artists, even though they're doing their thing, they're also showing you how to do it in one way or another. They're laying down blueprints, whether they know it or not, but I feel like they do know that they're doing it. Part of me feels like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I always go back to this line that Lupe Fiasco has on that Superstar record where he says, did you improve on the design? Did you do something new? And it's damn, that's what Nas, that's what Black Thought's doing. That's why I feel when we talk about what we do as comedians, it's I feel we're in the process of doing that, and we probably are doing it not even knowing that. But yeah, that's what I'm going for, man. It's fun, and it's fun to listen to these cats do this stuff, man. So I just appreciate it. That's one reason when we were talking last week about that article and the whole debate around hip hop, where it's like, it's still great shit going on, man. It's still the great artists. And I just don't, in the quest to not be a curmudgeon in that way about hip hop, I'm trying to seek that stuff out and trying to like amplify it, even though, I mean, it's fucking Nas. Like, people are gonna know when he puts something out, but just to kind of speak on it in that way while it's in real time, to say like, we've never seen this before in this genre, we've never seen this before, and this is a guy who, and Nas is different than Black Thought in the way that Much was. You put out Illmatic in what, 93 94?
I think it's
93 and it's like, he's expected to be this way. He's had his ups and his downs. Like, he can't pick beats, it's this and that, but he's continuing to do the work, you know. So and Much was put onto him, Much was expected, and he's still doing it. So like, that's the thing that I appreciate about him, and every time he puts something out.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, Magic 3 is coming out, and, you know, I remember I had Nikki P on here a few episodes back, and she was talking about how she liked Magic 2. I'm going to re-listen to Magic 2. I loved Magic 1. I don't really remember liking Magic 2. I'll be honest with you, I'm not the biggest Hit Boy fan, production-wise, if I'm being totally honest with you. But I appreciate him. I was just listening to his interview on Broken Record interview, and I appreciate him. I appreciate what he's doing, what he's trying to do, and all of that, you know. And I'm gonna go back and listen to Magic 2. What I appreciate about what Nas is doing in particular, particularly specifically that he's Nas, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of the few. You count it on one hand, in my estimation, of rappers that came in the game on a, like, de facto classic. Illmatic is arguably the best rap album of all time, you know, if you want to have that type of thing. So he came in, like, at the apex of it all. It's almost like he could only go down, you know, and a lot of people feel like it was written, one of my homies, shout out to my man, Johnny Mingle. He was one of the first people I ever heard say that It Was Written was better than Illmatic. And I remember when he first said it, I thought it was blasphemous. But that take has kind of permeated the game. There's a lot of people that kind of feel like that. I don't know about that. But all of that to say, he was heralded as like this genius. You know, like this golden child, and like, you know, this, I don't say perfect artist, but again, like, he came in the game as a classic. So everything else had like the level of scrutiny that everything in it, everything following received, was so sharp that it was almost unfair. Right.
Yeah.
And what I appreciate about this Hit Boy run, what is this, damn near 6 records? This is about to be the 6th record. There's 3 KDs, and now it's going to be 3 Magics. And there may be something else, but I believe it's 3 and 3.
I think you're right.
What I appreciate about it, especially, again, Nas specifically, somebody that is so heralded and so critiqued, that he is not being precious at all with this stuff. He's doing him. He's doing Nas. He's in it. He's cutting these albums. I was listening to the Hit Boy interview, and Hit Boy was like, yo, we're still working on an album. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is the byproduct of our process. But we putting these shits out. We like letting y'all motherfuckers hear where we going. And when this album is fully realized, it's going to be even iller. But even still, six pieces of work, and it, I said earlier before, talking about Richard, talking about Martin,
yeah,
you know, and I'm gonna reference this Kanye quote when somebody was like, well, what about your legacy? And he was like, don't leverage fear with me. He was like, my legacy is my legacy. Don't try to leverage fear of what my legacy could be to control me. You know, I think that there's this kind of this pursuit.
Kanye
for,
said that?
Hell yeah, he said that shit. I forget where he said it.
Send me that shit.
Yay, yay, you know, yay. It's like a broken clock. You know what I mean? Like, he gonna be on point twice a day, at least.
Yeah.
You know, he says some other shit that you don't really want to quote. But that motherfucker can be brilliant when he needs to be brilliant. Not when he needs to be brilliant, but he can be brilliant. Let's say that. I don't know if he has command of his brilliance as he used to, but he said that shit and it made me really, like, it made me stop because it was so fucking, you know, back in the day, I used to feel like Kanye was one of the most self-aware artists of all time. Like early Kanye, just the way that he kind of talked about what was going on. Like he was in on it. He heard everything. He processed all that shit. But when he said, yo, don't try to leverage my legacy against me. I don't move on fear. That made me look at shit like all of this shit about chasing excellence and perfection. Again, it's so subjective. I always say that I love to go to, you know, one of my things that I love to do is go to museums and I look at like these exhibits of these great artists and it has a bunch of their periods and you look at like the, like this compendium of their work and some shit is good and some shit is whatever, but that's life. That's a career. That's a body of work. You know what I mean? Sometimes you might miss the mark. I remember LL saying most recently, like, he was like, you know, as long as you love it when you put it out in the world, however it's received is however it's received. Because you loved it when it left. So remember that.
Right.
You know what I mean? You were connected to it. And when you put it out in the world to share it with the world, if it hit, it hit. If it didn't, it didn't. And sometimes it takes years for things, people double back and they be like, you know what? That shit was kind of fire. I'm like now revisiting it, all of this other shit. Long story short, art is subjective. So somebody that was like, whose career is so highly critiqued and, you know, was held so high, you know what I mean? You know, one hot album every 10-year average type shit, you know what I mean? Like for him to put out so many fucking records and stay relevant and like shit, get a Grammy and all of that. Like, it's amazing to watch. It's inspiring as shit, you know, to see that. So like, I'm looking forward to Magic 3. I'm sure there's gonna be some shit on there that I'm gonna fuck with. I'm gonna go back and listen to Magic 2, you know what I mean, and revisit it or whatever. But like, I feel like, and it was funny because I kind of wanted to have this conversation. I don't know if we got enough time, but like, you know, I've been watching a lot of comedy specials, right? You know, at some point I got to do something. I put an hour out and I, you know, shit, I might just self-release it. You know what I mean? YouTube, like that's kind of what's going on in the world. And you know, there's always, like I said, I grew up watching, in my mind, in my own estimation, the greats, people that I feel are great. You know, again, that's relative too, you know, but I grew up like inspired by greatness. So I don't want to put out no mediocrity or whatever, whatever. But at a certain time, you kind of got to put your offering out into the world. And you know what I mean? If you fuck with it, put it in the world. And I think I got a taste of being too precious. And I've been noticing, you know, we've had this conversation.
Always, a lot.
A lot of this, the special thing, you know, I remember Chris Rock saying a lot of specials is regulars, and you know, sometimes when people that you sometimes people you fuck with say some shit, it kind of could fuck with how you look at shit. But I do feel like the you know, especially particularly the YouTube special and even some of the Netflix specials, some of these specials are really just proof of concepts, so people will kind of come and see you do comedy, you know, I'm being honest, because to be fucking honest, we're gonna take all the romance out of this shit. I love this game. I love comedy. I don't even want to call it the game. I love the yard of comedy. But if we're being totally honest, you know, if we're talking about being a touring comedian, so much of it all is food and beverage. Shout out to Casino. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, can this nigga sell out this weekend and move some tickets? Because if so, we'll give this motherfucker the opportunity because we're going to make our money back. All of that art shit, that's subjective. Can you put people in the fucking seats? Long story short, and I'll talk about this at the end of the shit, but this is a great segue. Yo, I'm at DC Improv in fucking February 8th through 10th. Please buy some tickets. We want motherfuckers out there. But
that's right.
You got to put some shit in the world. You got to put the shit in the world so people know, oh, this is what it is. And understand that you ain't for everybody. You know what I mean?
Right.
Get your crowd. Get your crowd. Like, everybody don't love Black Thought. Everybody don't love Nas. Everybody don't love Hov. Everybody don't love Kanye. But the people that fuck with them, or people that fuck with them, they fuck with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it is what it is, man. Let art be art and support it. You know what I mean? Uplift it if you fuck with it. You know, platform it if you fuck with it. Be inspired by it. And you know, contribute. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man. I'm definitely on some Sauvignon Blanc. But I say all of that shit to say I'm looking forward to Magic 3. It should be good. You know, hopefully I'm excited to... You know, I like the run that they are on. It's inspiring. Hopefully more motherfuckers will, you know, kind of take the mantle and go for it. I would love for somebody to lock in with Hov because it's been some time. I would love to hear a nice little Hov project. There's a lot of motherfuckers that I would love to hear. And speaking of, you know, we talked about Eddie, and I said Eddie and Big Daddy Kane were my inspirations growing up. That Big Daddy Kane Drink Champs interview is a motherfucker. Big Daddy Kane, and I'll be done after this. Big Daddy Kane is like one of, he's a legendary rapper. He's one of my favorite rappers of all time. My first probably favorite rapper. Maybe, I don't know. But definitely in my top five. Kane, even though he ain't had a hit in 30 years, self-admittedly, he said it. That nigga has been cool throughout his entire career. Even if he isn't as relevant or he ain't got no shit of the charts, he didn't fall off or get dusty like some of these other motherfuckers or say the wrong thing and, you know what I mean, just be out of step. He a cool motherfucker to the end.
Shout out, shout out to Santana.
Who's Santana? Who's that?
Remember, he's not a rapper, but you know San Carlos Santana.
Dude, oh, Carlos.
It was just like random.
random. Like, let me just jump on this third rail. Let me enter this conversation that is killing niggas off just for the fuck of it.
We were having a good time, Carlos.
Yeah, nigga, you should have just kept strumming along. But you know, that's how what happened when you get older, and that's a fear, man. That's why you gotta have some young, cool motherfuckers that you talk to, and you know what I mean. Like, don't go too deep in the cave. Don't go all the way Salinger, because when you do pop out, you're gonna be on a whole different page, and it's gonna show. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, try to stay, try to, you know, have how you feel, but you know, like, don't jump out the window with no parachute, because it's not gonna help anyone. But go ahead, what are you about to say?
I'm gonna check that out. I'm gonna check that Drink Champs out.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, he did a record with Little Brother like years ago.
Yeah. He out in North Carolina.
He's one of the greats. It, like, to your point about Nas, like, to me, a lot of his career kind of reminds me, like, when you were speaking on it, reminds me of a LeBron James. How, if you look at Nas, he's essentially a child prodigy. Yeah. And he put out, like, a lot of times people put out a major work and didn't have to do shit else. But he continued to put this work out. People say what they will about it, but like LeBron, to me, after he got that first chip with Miami, I was like, okay, good. This is Ron Howard, dog. He's like our Ron Howard. Like, it's like, okay, you were Andy Griffith. We loved you when you was a kid doing your thing. Now you made it. Now you got, you in the NBA. You got the chip. You're doing this. So anything, everything else to me where LeBron is really icing on the cake. And I know Rich Paul came under a lot of fire about a week ago when he said that LeBron was the most critiqued and scrutinized player. It's true.
He's up there.
He had to do all that shit where a lot of these other guys didn't have to go through a lot as much as LeBron did.
Boomer Esiason went through a whole lot.
Okay.
Now I'm just talking shit. Go ahead, keep going. I just felt like saying Boomer Esiason. No, LeBron may be. LeBron might be that guy.
He's one of them, man. Like, it just, and for him to excel under all that scrutiny is very remarkable, actually. But yeah, like you were saying, like I like to see it happen. It just made me think of LeBron, where he got a lot of, he's constantly, he can never do enough. It's, you know.
Yeah. But he, you know, I think what's interesting with LeBron is he goes all out. Like he's not fading into the sunset. Like, he's running through the tape full gusto. I just heard that. I've seen a lot of people talking about, he's saying that he's going to go to do the Olympics in 2024. And the level of excitement that people have, I seen Gilbert Arenas going crazy. I know you fuck with him, trying to drive to Paris from wherever Gilbert is. But, you know, like, LeBron is going there. Like, he's not afraid to, like,
to fail.
You know what I mean? Like, because shit, he's been winning for so long. Like, he's in the books already. That's the thing about it. Once you in the books, you can play with the chapters. You know what I'm saying? Like, all this, like, again, man, that Kanye shit, man, don't leverage my legacy against me, man. I don't move off of fear.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what made me think of that. Because you made me think of this really profound moment that LeBron said before Game 7, when they beat the Warriors in Game 7. They asked him, like, you know, how he felt. He's like, I'm just going to play. He just said essentially something like, I'm going to play as hard as I can. I'm going to put it all out there, and I'm going to live with the results. And right. I was like, holy shit.
That's it.
I mean, like, the haters will say, oh, you just saying that because if you lose, you can just say whatever. But it's like, nah, like, I'm going to give it all I got, and then I have to live with the results.
Right.
And I was like, fuck, that's real.
Yeah. Because you learn from everything, even the L. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, fuck it, man. Go for yours. It is what it is. I was, you know, to that point, I was reading this, this article in the New Yorker by Toni Morrison. It's an old article, but it's just called, basically the name of the article is "The Work You Do, The Person You Are," you know?
Okay.
And, you know, I've never gotten through a full Toni Morrison book. So this is the most Toni Morrison reading that I've done. And it's a New Yorker article, so the fact that I got to the end of it felt amazing for me. But, you know, basically, the article, just the summation, she's talking about how she used to, you know, clean house for this white lady, right, who was doing very well. And this was, like, kind of the wartime where people were, like, you know, kind of living lean. She wasn't. She was living high on the hog. She was doing great things, and she was getting to it. And one of the things that was seductive about working for this woman, not only just being in proximity to everything that she had and maybe even being inspired, but she made the point of saying that, you know, she was working so she had money for, like, odds and ends, but also had money to contribute to the household, you know, and it felt good because she felt like she was worth something. You know, she wasn't just a kid. And she was saying back in the days, you know, before, you know, nowadays, her thing was nowadays kids are, like, you know, doted on and, you know, there's not much expectation. Back then, kids were, you know, there was somebody, they were sent out to work to make some money for the family or to raise a younger kid. Like, they were put to use, you know, and she felt like, you know, the fact that she could bring in a little bit that could be contributed to the light bill or whatever, it made her feel like a contributing part of the family, right? And that was part of what made her, you know, endure a lot of the kind of the bullshit that this lady was putting her through. And ultimately, you know, the lady was kind of, you know, pushing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, really? Yeah. Like, yo, we need you to bring these bookshelves upstairs. You know, we need you to move this piano by yourself. And shit got ridiculous. And she didn't really want to complain because, again, she liked being able to contribute to the household. But one day she, you know, I guess she kind of let it slip and she told her father. And I guess she was kind of looking for her father to, you know, give her the, yo, nah, don't even worry about it. Quit that job. She knew her moms would say quit the job. But she said she told her father and her father listened. But he, she said, I saw no sympathy in his eyes. No, oh, you poor little thing. Perhaps he understood what I wanted was a solution to the job, not an escape from it. So in any case, he put down his cup of coffee and he said, listen, you don't live there. You live here with your people. Go to work, get your money, and come on home. And he, and she said, that's what I, that's what he said. This is what I heard. One, whatever the work is, do it well. Not for the boss, but for yourself. You make the job. It doesn't make you. Your real life is with us, your family. You are not the work you do. You are the person you are. And I felt that because I do think that's real. You know, sometimes we can be very much, not even as artists or comedians or whatever, even beyond that. I remember when I used to work at Vibe. You know, I was Damien from Vibe or whatever the fuck. Sometimes, if you're not careful, you can define yourself by whatever occupation you have. And if you don't have that occupation, you could damn near lose yourself. You are who you are before you approach any of this shit. And sometimes you need to realize that, you know what I mean? And stand in that power, because that's going to give you power. You know what I mean? And as long as you're doing your best and putting your best foot forward, that's it. That's it. Like everything else, this is not no type of referendum on who you are as a person. You are not your work. You know what I mean? You do the best with your work, but you are who you are before your work. And it's just a great reminder. So, you know, I just wanted to drop that shit before we transform and roll out, because we're in the hour 30 minutes. And
Autobots.
You know what I mean? Transform and roll out. Chris, let the people know where you're going to be. Tell them, you know what I mean?
Man, if you listen to this tonight, I mean, today, I will be at Friends and Lovers doing a show called Good Girl at 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I will be at the Cobra Club in Brooklyn at 8:30. And I'll be at the Boca Black Box on October 20th and 21st. Some headlining, some opening for SNL's Tim Meadows.
Dope, dope. The ladies' man. That's what's up.
Yes,
what's
up? The ladies' man.
You're cracking that mic. You know me, I'm on sabbatical for a moment, like I said.
Okay.
You can catch me here every Wednesday in the conversation, but also I'll be at the Borgata in October. I believe it's the 13th through the 15th. As soon as the tickets are available, they will be on the website. But more importantly, a couple things. If you want to see me at a comedy club in your city, go to that comedy club and demand Damian Lemon. Yo, bring Damian Lemon out here, because I'm calling these motherfuckers and I'm setting shit up. Speaking of such, you know, I'll set up some shit at the DC Improv February 8th through the 10th. I will be at the DC Improv. Them tickets are on sale right now. I want to sell that bitch out. So you could go to my website, DamianLemon.com. You could go to the DCImprov.com and buy them tickets now. We don't need to wait till February. And, you know, I'm going to be keeping that website up to date as far as local shows and things of that nature. And pay attention to the YouTube. I'm going to be putting up some content. And that's it for right now. And I really mean this when I say, tell a friend to tell a friend. Go tell one of your friends and even an enemy. Your op, tell your op. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Before you, you know, take their life. Don't do that. But before, you know what I mean? You shit on their moms or whatever. You know what I mean? You trip their uncle and they fall down a flight of stairs, whatever. Before you do all of that aggressive shit, let them know that there's a podcast called In the Conversation and you fuck with it, especially if you listen to me right now, that means you listen to this shit all the way through. So like I said, tell a friend to tell a friend, Chris.
And even an enemy.
To listen to the conversation, to get in the conversation. We out. Peace.
Hello.
Conversation.